Mr. Kaczynski? Mr. Hawley?
Here.
Mr. Dougherty?
Here.
Mr. McGoldrick?
Here.
Mr. Pasca?
Here.
Dr. Zuzalo? Mr. Drosko?
Here.
Ms. Majewski?
Here.
Mr. Curtis?
Here.
Mr. Neff? Ms. Walter?
Here.
Mr. Bearmore? And Mr. Halara?
Here.
Pursuant to Section 5 of the Open Public Meetings Act, this meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting in Borough Hall by the borough clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial proceeding. Any comments or questions must be limited to issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. Decorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times. We'll open up right now for any public comment for items which are not on tonight's agenda. Seeing none in the audience, do we have any online?
We do not have any attendees on Zoom.
Pending litigation?
I'm pleased to report there is none.
Outstanding. Any other business that we wanted to say wasn't here last week, but I understand it was a little bit fun. All right, very good. At this time, we are going to have a review of the affordable housing plan. Mr. Dougherty, if you want to just make a quick intro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So each municipality in the state of New Jersey is required to submit an updated affordable housing fair share plan. We've been given until June 30th of this year to do so. It's a very short timeline. But the planning board's participation in the formulation of this plan is very important. And then whatever plan the planning board puts forth, the governing body has to adopt it and send it off to the state. And so we've invited our affordable housing planner, Peter Vandenkoy. I apologize if I didn't say your name properly.
That's right.
He's invited here tonight to give an overview of the process, to talk through to the board members and members of the public what the planning board and the borough are being tasked with, to discuss what the state mandated obligations are, to answer any related questions. So,
thank you very much.
Over to Peter.
The floor is yours, Mr. Vandenkoy.
Thank you. Thank you both. So I guess I wanted to just start with a broad overview of what a housing plan element and fair share plan is in the context of the planning board's responsibilities in the municipal land use law, and then provide just kind of an overview of the timeline for affordable housing compliance, and then we can get into some details about the different compliance approaches that the borough might be able to use to address the fourth rounds, and then any questions along the way, you know, certainly feel free to jump in. And I'm sorry, can everybody hear me? I'm a low talker sometimes. I'll do my best to project my voice. So essentially, the housing plan element and fair share plan is the main document that's produced as part of the affordable housing process. And that's a municipal land use law master plan element, just like the land use plan, except there's an additional layer that's basically mandated by the state, as we all know. There's affordable housing obligations that are assigned, and they stem from the Fair Housing Act and all the regulations that are associated with that. And essentially, this all goes back, and I'm not going to bore you with the minute details, but basically back in the 70s and the 80s, the initial Mount Laurel decisions, then, you know, stemming from those was the Fair Housing Act, and then you had prior rounds. Now, I would say the prior rounds are rounds 1, 2, and 3, because we're looking at the fourth round, but the original prior rounds were rounds 1 and 2. Now, it's 1987 and 1999, and essentially there's obligations assigned for that time frame, and then we had the third round, which went from 1999 all the way up to June 30th, 2025 of this year. So basically, we're still, you know, very tail end of that, and what we have now is the fourth round from 2025 to 2035 is really what we're looking at as far as, like, how to craft a compliance plan for that round. And essentially what we have is the borough has adopted a housing plan element fair share plan as of 2019. That's still in effect. You're fully compliant. You have a judgment of compliance and repose. And that's going to continue to be in effect until June 30th of this year, and then that's where technically it shifts to the fourth round. So we're trying to get a fourth round plan in ideally by June 30th, but since we're kind of late getting started, we've applied for an extension, and I'll provide a little bit more detail about that, potentially in July. And so basically, in January, the borough acknowledged the obligations that the state produced last fall. And again, these are state mandated obligations that kind of just are handed down. The obligation is zero unit rehabilitation obligation, also known as the present need, which is great because last round it was 51 units. So it's, that's a win in terms of that obligation. And then also, in terms of the prospective need, the actual new construction obligations, I would refer to it. It is 48 units for the fourth round. The third round was very much higher, it was 207. So again, a significant reduction, which is good. I mean, as these, but then it spends a little bit of state, 40, it's not bad. We've got towns that are in the many hundreds. So good, you know, I think it's considered good results as far as the responsibilities. And then essentially where we're at now is we're preparing the Hamilton and Fair Share Plan, including the Baker Land Adjustment. And the Baker Land Adjustment was also prepared for the third round plan. And essentially, what that does, and I'll get into a little bit more detail about that in a moment, but it reduces the amount of units you have to build and plan for, let's say, concrete in the near term. And it basically splits your four-year obligation into two components. One is an obligation that you have to plan for an actual, like, implement projects that you can plan to and say this is, you know, proposed or what's done specifically. The rest of the obligation, typically the vast majority of it, is the one that you. And that's just a general number that you have to try to meet if the opportunity arises. And that's typically through what you're going to do. You know, just basically have general ordinances and inputs and if the project, you know, comes with that, let's say 2 years from now, there's a serious part of commercial building, someone wants to build, and again, if the IP does actually build it, they'll come forward and that might be, you know, temporary with the essential. So that's kind of the wrong way. So, basically, it's just part of the timeline that we're looking at. And I don't have any questions about it. Thank you.
spaces. And the matter of young visitors with zoning ordinance where one space at the Mass Center. That's kind of existing division. There was a change in existing to have two cars in the front yard. So, the process of three spaces in the front. And then we have three
those two do create some unique business and hardships for the proposed development. The building coverage, as identified, we are requesting a variance of 18.6%, which is allowed, 15.8% exists. That building coverage of 15.8 exists there today. So hardship not only applies to the lot and shape of the pre-existing legal structures on the property, so any opportunity to add a porch to this would increase that building coverage. In addition, we are requesting that maximum lot coverage in a steep slope area, as well as the maximum impervious area in a steep slope area, which those numbers have been identified. But to be clear, we try to mitigate that by that reduction of the driveway, and the delta here, the increase is about 115 square feet on a 13,430 square foot lot. As a result, I think the variances here can be granted under both the C1 and the C2 criteria. The C1, where by reason of exceptional narrowness, shallowness of shape, we certainly have a unique shape here. But also, by reason of extraordinary unique situation, maybe affecting a specific piece of property or disruptions that usually and lawfully exist. So in this particular case, as I said, in order to add a porch to a pre-existing home here, it would increase the building coverage. In addition, we have the interest of the steep slopes. The design here has very intentionally avoided the steep slopes and proposed the porch entirely in the D zone, the non-steep slope area of the lot. So I do believe that the variances can be granted under the C1 criteria. I also believe they can be granted under the C2 criteria. That's the better planning criteria. We have Section 2 of the municipal land use law, the purposes of planning, to identify where the purposes are advanced as a result of an application and may outweigh any detriments. I think the purposes of planning here, specifically the promotion of the general welfare and promotion of a desirable rural environment, are both promoted by the application and outweigh any detriment for the coverage. And that, for many reasons, one, it improves the look and curb appeal of the home, specifically providing a desirable visual environment. As you heard from the architecture of the home is a little off balance. It's a little leaning towards the right. The proposed design intentionally provides some more texture and weight architecturally on the left-hand side, balancing the look of the home. It also provides a porch, which is a typical accessory and amenity for homes not only in the area, but homes in this block. And it's, let's be honest, it's on the northern side of that point. It's a beautiful view, and having a porch there to promote the look of that home, I think, is certainly appropriate for the area and really anticipated. So I think for those reasons, we certainly promote the purposes of zoning. I also don't believe there's a substantial detriment as a result of the application. As you've heard, we've tried to mitigate the impact here by some reduction in driveway. We're addressing any drainage, which is generally one of your primary concerns in a steep slope area, and the variances here are due to that steep slope. And we're not impacting this steep slope area completely within a D section and 25 feet away from any slope area. So I think it's the most appropriate location. So I do not believe there's any detriment to the zoning plan. There's no importance as a result of the application, nor any detriment to the public good. I think it'll only be improved. So I do believe the benefits here outweigh the detriments, and the board can grant the variances as requested. We've already provided testimony that there is no impact to parking. The parking demand doesn't change. We're not adding any interior space in the building porch, and we're fully compliant with the RSI parking standards. And you've heard that the stormwater has also been addressed. In addition, in my opinion, as a professional engineer, I do not believe there's any detriment to any steep slopes as a result of the construction of the minimal amount of disturbance proposed. Any footings for the porch would be 3 feet below grade, which sits only about 2 feet above the road, which is set back 32 feet. So we're not proposing any impacts in slope areas, and I think the depth of the footings are more than adequate to address any potential slope considerations. Any questions for the witness? Took the lead off. Yes, thank you. So, from an engineering perspective, we're So, are you anticipating any benefit from the ability for water to infiltrate and increase those T-6C, those flow tolerance? Are you anticipating any benefit to even further mitigate that 115 square feet net?
Absolutely. When we have disconnected impervious areas that are allowed to flow over pervious areas, grassed areas, you have the benefit of additional infiltration. Anytime we can disconnect impervious where the driveway currently is considered a connected impervious, where the water flows directly into the sewer system, I think what's proposed is actually a beneficial impact to stormwater by allowing that to flow over the lawn. And as you see in the photos, it's a very manicured lawn, certainly not an erosion potential, in my opinion.
We're talking in layman's terms, less water to the street because it's not on the driveway, because the driveway is smaller, more water on the grass, and it'll infiltrate before it gets to the street. It appears that there's no opportunity for the water that falls on the current driveway area to be removed. There's no opportunity for the infiltrate prior to getting to the roadway network and ultimately down the road into the pipe network.
That is accurate, yes.
Now, that's going to be removed, and there's going to be additional impervious added, giving an opportunity to infiltrate into the lawn.
Correct.
And soil conditions. Yeah. I think that was where I was going to. Like, I appreciate them taking the driveway portion out, but my concern is that it's on that steep slope side. Now, is it worth the 115 square feet to slow that? Like, is it going to be a benefit? I mean, from my perspective, every inch of impervious helps, because all that water needs to make its way all the way down through the road network, the pipe network, and eventually discharge at some point. So having disconnected impervious is a key design factor that we absolutely look for.
I see on the survey that there is a brick wall connecting the water to the driveway. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm not sure that, because we are over the impervious, I just want to make sure that there are any plans to widen that wall or, formalize it or anything like that. Is there any as is?
It will remain as is, correct. I believe it will only widen right at the front step.
Right. Okay. Thanks. I have a question. Is there anything, so I'm sure, looking at the home, it has the original gutter system. Is there anything new and amazing that's going on the new part with regards to gutter systems, right? So maybe something to get better. It's a little bit wider so you don't get that open flow, right? So is there anything like that?
I don't know that it's this, a wider system, but it's a new system. So most importantly, it's probably sloped, it's updated, it's a newer material. Typically, not aluminum, a lot of times vinyl now, flows a little better. So yeah, we shouldn't have any of that overtopping of the gutter system, which can create some erosion concerns.
Okay. My other comment is on the, I laugh when I look at it because we call it steep slope, and I think there's, it doesn't look really too steep at all, but that side on the driveway, and to your point, Doug, I think if you do remove a piece of that, it's only going to benefit any runoff that comes down that slope, because now it's going to a flatter area, a more pervious area, where before it was just running right onto the driveway and out into the street. So I think there is an advantage to chopping off that area and making it pervious and getting rid of the asphalt. That's just my
opinion.
In order to achieve that, is it accurate to say the depressed curb opening will be reduced? Right now you have full depressed curb.
Correct. Across the entire length of that. So I believe we could certainly remove that
But we would certainly match what's out there.
Okay. So there was discussion on reducing the width of the driveway to 22 feet with the depressed curb being similar in dimension, 24 feet. If you get some room for transition.
Yes.
24 foot depression.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Any questions from Mr. Kachuba from the audience? Thank you. No one ever gets my name right the first time.
Well, it was my name here, so. Anyway, nobody else? Same on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Kachuba is still here. Your question is to Doug.
Especially in the speech of that top of the hill. And
please. You know, who doesn't want a front porch here in Atlantic Highlands, right? Enjoy those breezes. So, I think it's a good application.
I feel bad looking at their slope, that they're in a steep slope area, the residents, and the house area. I was expecting, you know, when I looked at the drawing, I was expecting to see, I'm like, that's it, that's the slope, you know.
It's unfortunate.
I have sympathy for them, that they have to go through this effort to put something as minimally invasive in as this porch.
Maybe in the future, there's some way to separate some of these houses so they don't get lumped into this. You know, it's not fair to have to go through the process for some of these houses that don't have, which houses in the steep slope don't have any slope at all. Not even close to the edge of the, you know, cliffs.
We're gonna add that to the side list, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna get on that. I know it's a lot of work, but it really should be done, because it all is gonna do is benefit the people that obviously such a duty, maybe because it's something that's pretty important.
Earlier, take it as a lot by lot.
Right.
Lump everything into one.
Right.
Lot. Because on the other side of the street, there's some slope.
Right.
Very disappointing, because you're in the same block.
Yeah, right.
We had the same issue up on the hill on Bear Brook, where they just wanted to put an addition on the house, they had a pool, and it was 6 foot of the far corner that was in the steep slope.
And it's very expensive for people to go through the process of the, you know, it's just, so, Mr. Shaw, like, we all understand when you probably started thinking about this project, and next thing you know, you guys are all kinds of experts and drawings and stuff, but we realize that it's, you know, it can certainly be burdensome. And
I mean, no offense, I know what these three guys cost. I mean, a lot of money.
It's just a lot, like, truthfully, we know, yeah.
But also, there's a thoughtfulness, in the play.
Yeah, right.
But, no, I appreciate the thoughtfulness that went into this and to make sure it's in the flatter part of the zone.
And you know, yourselves, anytime we have an application that's in the steep slope zone, we need to address it as if it's in.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is, for better or for worse. Any other comments?
So okay. How do we make a motion to approve with the waiver with all the caveats?
Well, you simply going to make a motion to approve it. There will be a condition of the motion that the applicant provide a fair capacity analysis to Doug's satisfaction prior to the issuance of permit. And there's one other item. You may want to condition it that this is going to be an open porch where the roof is not going to be enclosed at some point in the future of the walls.
And then walls, we're talking full enclosure, correct? We're not talking if they decide to put up a little decorative railing that they're going to have to come back here.
Talking about closing it as part of the interior.
Okay. Because when you make that up, and you may say, ooh, I don't like the aesthetic of it open. Maybe I'll put like a little railing.
A sunshade or something.
Correct. Yeah. So we're talking about a full enclosure, like a screening porch or something like that.
So the correct part of that was part of the testimony that it will not be enclosed.
No, it's not the most famous.
Right. So, we're good with that.
Yeah. Is that a motion? You want to go?
Yeah. I need a motion to approve on all the conditions.
We need a second.
I'll second, Jocelyn.
Mr. Fowler?
Yes.
Mr. Dockerman?
Yes.
Mr. McAlder?
Yes.
Mr. Fasten?
Yes.
Mr. Jocelyn?
Yes.
Ms. Majewski?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mrs. Walker?
Yes.
And Mr.
Thurber?
Yes.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You. Okay, so before we make a motion to adjourn, just as a reminder to everybody, keep an eye out on your emails. Probably like Monday or Tuesday, or hopefully tomorrow, but like if we get a reply Monday or Tuesday. All right.
Okay.
Thanks very much, everybody. We have a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion. Majewski.